Hey everyone, it's Andy Bueller, high school sports reporter and host of the Scorebook Live Today podcast. So the coronavirus has shut down schools and halted high school sports, but we're taking things up a notch in hopes to help during this time of great uncertainty. Each day we're releasing a special episode of this podcast called Dickow's Quarantine Series, where our own Dan Dickow interviews an expert in their respective field, from coaches to trainers, authors to former standout athletes. Subscribe to this podcast for free, and please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Let's keep everyone safe by washing your hands and following the governor's stay-at-home mandate. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are. Here's Dan Dickow after a word from our sponsor. Are you a small business impacted by the coronavirus? Washington Federal is here to help. Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live, and it's offering a 5-year business line of credit with 90 days interest for free to businesses that have seen a 10% or greater drop. Apply now to receive up to $200,000 on business lines of credit. The folks at Washington Federal understand small businesses may need an emergency loan. They're doing their best to help during this global pandemic. If you're a small business owner who needs help, head to wafdbank.com to apply. Questions? Email business.lifeline@wafd.com.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington. Today's podcast during the quarantine series, if you've been following what we've been doing, we've had guests in a number of different aspects of sports, whether it's the business side of sports, maybe you're an author, strength coach, a number of different coaches at all different levels have joined. Today we've got a coach who has a tremendous amount of experience at all levels at the college game. Originally from Tacoma, we welcome RJ Barsh, who's currently an assistant coach at Boise State, to the podcast today. RJ, thanks for joining. How's everything going in Boise?
Man, like you said, quarantine life, but Boise is a beautiful place. And so it's going good, man, here with my baby boy and my family. So taking advantage of some of that family time during this crisis, you know?
You know, that's one thing that a lot of people say they want to get into college coaching, but they don't understand the grind, the time commitment. They would think, or they would expect, that NCAA tournament's over, you're just going to sit and relax. And that typically is not the case. That's almost many times your busiest time of year. But it's different this year because of everything that's going on in the world. Explain to somebody what a typical college basketball calendar looks like for a coach like yourself.
So, right. I mean, we don't really believe in a calendar in a sense. It's what the NCAA tells you, when you can go out and recruit and when you can see guys. You follow that. That's your Bible. That's your calendar. But at all times, with the transfer market and JUCO kids and high school kids getting ready to come out and being more mature, I mean, if you don't have a board in your office that has 15, 20 guys that you're checking on every day, or new guys you're looking for, then you're in trouble. So my typical morning, you know, the first thing I do once I get in the office is, I mean, you're going down your list of guys you need to contact: AAU coaches, high school coaches, parents. And that happens when you can recruit them, call them, whatever. You just always are planning ahead for potential things that happen on your roster. And there's some good things, like, you know, Derek Austin, you know, announcing to go for the draft last week. And so now, if he gets drafted, we need another guy who's very good to step into that role. And so if we weren't recruiting a bunch of guys early, we'd be in trouble. But by the grace of God, that's part of your schedule. And then usually the travel, man, like, you travel throughout the year, of course, going to games with your team and whatnot. But what people don't see is when you look at your schedule and you see, oh, I got a bye here, I have a bye here. Well, that bye means, I mean, there's one trip where we went to New Mexico, we flew there, and right after the game, I'm on another plane flying to Phoenix. I got to go down to Dallas, and I got to get to Phoenix, and that's normal. Like, that's typical. It would be normal. It would not be normal for all of us to just get on a plane and go home together.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's understanding to manage your time travel, And then understanding your role as a coach. My role is player development. So, yeah, we have practice for an hour, 2.5 hours a day. But there's also about 6 hours throughout that day where I'm doing one-on-one things with my players. And so if you got a guy who's great at 6 a.m., then I'm great at 6 a.m. But then you have a guy who has class from 4 to 6:30, and we practice at 1. Well, it's going to be good, better for him to go at 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. And so your schedule, you really are at the mercy of how good you want to be and how much you want to sacrifice and schedule. You got to be organized. And I learned that being at the NAI level, not having a staff my first couple years taught me the importance of time management. And Dan, I ask myself this question all the time. What's the one thing I can do today that brings the biggest value to our program a year from now? And that's the thing that I would focus on. Like, if I didn't do anything else today, what is the most important thing? And sometimes that would be go rebound for Justinian.
You know, I love that that phrase, what can I do today that's going to have the biggest impact a year from now, whether it's a basketball team, a program, whether that's your own individual career. That is so true. And I think that's a great nugget that student athletes, coaches, parents can put in their back pocket and just think on at different times. You touched on being at the NAIA level and the fact that you had to wear so many hats and kind of control schedules and be very organized. I don't think enough current high school players, coaches, and parents understand just how good the basketball is at every other level besides Division I. Everybody thinks Division I, Division I, if you don't make it, unfortunately, you're not a success. And I don't view that at all. You look at, there's really good Division II programs. There's great Division IIIs. Two of them in the state of Washington, Whitworth and Whitman, are tremendous. And then NAIA, just right down the road in Lewiston, is Lewis and Clark State. Yeah, so tell us how good NAIA basketball is.
Now, I mean, I can go all the way back to being D3. I mean, when I got hurt at Central Washington, and then I transferred to Puget Sound as a student assistant. I tried to play, but my back really didn't work out. I mean, we were at Sweet 16, Elite 18, in Tacoma, Washington, on the other side of 6th Ave. Like, with guys that could Chase Curtis, you know, some guys that could really, really play. And the NAIA level, let me tell you, in my 7 years, I had 18 Division I and Division II transfers. All right, 7 of them started for me. So just think about that. Like, people think, oh, you're coming, you're dropping down, you're going to start. Didn't always work out that way. Washington guys will know the name Dre Winston. All right, Dre Winston played at Lakes. Then he went to Washington State. Go look up what Dre Winston did in the state tournament when he was at Lakes High School. Well, Dre Winston came down and played for me for a year, took us to the conference championship game, and dropped 40 and played, you know, high level. The last team we took to the tournament, I won a conference championship. Every single starter on that team logged Division I minutes as a starter the year before, from Southeast Missouri, Charleston Southern, East Carolina. And so the talent level is the guys are ready to play. They're ready made to play because the opportunity exists there. And I think another thing people forget about when you're doing the NAI thing is you don't have to sit out. So it's very appealing to a high school, a JUCO kid or a Division I player who wants to transfer. You can transfer and come play right away. And I would encourage some of these parents, if you're listening, to go look at some of these facilities, College of Idaho, Lewis and Clark, Southern Oregon, Vanguard. Go look at some of these facilities, and you will be blown away at what's offered. And then at the end of the day, the reason I was successful there is because the entry levels to get in academically are lower. Like, there's opportunities to really help young men get in and help. I had three guys who couldn't pass SAT, and I was able to get them in school. They had to sit the first semester. Now, take this out. One of them set out. Now he's got his graduate degree, and he's a teacher. Wow. Right? Like, you know, that's why I love the NAI level. But as far as, like, the skills and man, I'm at Boise State right now, and I'm watching some teams we play early, and I'm thinking, my point guard is better than that guy. And it just, you know, a lot of it is about space and opportunity, you know, space and opportunity.
Opportunity is always something that if you're prepared for it, you can take advantage of it, and you can change your world. You can change your program in a matter of no time if you're ready for that opportunity. There's one other aspect of the NAI that I think could spur the NAI to make another big jump in being more appealing to more kids. You and I touched on it really quickly before we started recording the podcast, is the fact that they're doing away with the Division I and the Division II aspect of the NAI, and they're just bringing it all together. What does that mean, and how is that going to impact the NAI?
Ultimate game changer, simply because all the NAI Division I and Division II, the only difference was your institution determining the level of scholarships you give, right? So a Division I can give, I think, 10 or 11, and the Division II, the max, I think, was 6, right? And so what they're doing is when they merge, you're going from like two divisions of 100 and something to now one division of almost 200 and I think 50, 60 teams, right, across the country. We'll have a tournament of 32, right, and they'll have the regional sites and whatnot. But I think the thing that changes the game is there's some schools in there that have consistently beat D1s. You got Georgetown in Kentucky who has literally won a couple of national titles. And what it's going to do to this landscape is it's going to put the brand in front of other kids that they have, that people haven't seen, because the Munster got bigger, which means sponsorship dollars are coming. So the rebranding is getting ready to happen. And unfortunately, with the coronavirus, this was going to be the launch this summer of the new NAI basketball, and it would have took the world by storm. I think basketball wise, AU coaches would have loved it, because now you got all these new scholarships that came available. You got some leagues getting 15, 20 new scholarships, right? That was going to enhance the brand, because it's going to give a lot of people opportunity.
That's awesome to hear. More opportunities for kids to extend their athletic playing career, but also to get an education that can propel them to do whatever they want, get into coaching like yourself, become a teacher, such as the other example you shared. You grew up in the Tacoma area. There's been some really good basketball over the years in different pockets of the state, but I think Tacoma has had some really good guards. You look at Isaiah Thomas, Abdul Gaddy, Avery Bradley. I'm sure I'm missing some guys. Yeah. When you look at Tacoma as a former player and now a coach, what brings you pride?
Attitude and work ethic. Like, when you leave Tacoma, there's this sense of, I got to do this and I got to be known as a worker, because that's our resume, that's our mentality. You know, you step on the floor and it's like a boxing ring. Like, for some reason, all us Tacoma guys grew up around the sport of boxing. Right, and Al Davis had the, so it was something we always saw. So that competitive nature of I can't lose by my work ethic. If I lose some other way, that's fine. But I'm gonna work so hard to be so confident when I step out there that something good's gonna happen. And I think it struck fear in players when they would have to play against a guy from Tacoma, because it felt that way, especially when they left Tacoma. And I see it all the time now. I mean, heck, we had to play against one twice this year named Malachi Flynn. And it's just, you know, I remember watching him grow up in the back gym and hanging out with his older brothers and his sisters and stuff. Like, the accountability that the players who have made it put on the young guys is what happens. Isaiah Thomas did something a couple years ago where he had probably like 20 of the top 7th, 8th, and 9th grade boys over to his house. And I believe he had Jamal over there, a couple other guys, and Isaiah talked to him about, if you do the work, this is what can happen for you. I'm not sure that's happening in other cities for NBA players. And in that room, you had Ahmad Rory, David Chris, Malachi Flynn, Phil Winston. I mean, he had all these guys that ended up being really, really good players. And so I think the separator is we compete with each other, but when you leave Tacoma, it's a family, and people know that.
I think that's something that's so great about the state of Washington and the players that have come out of here, is they're so supportive and they're pulling for each other. I mean, I recorded an interview with Jamal Crawford, similar to what we're doing now, that's set to release very soon, and he was listing names of guys just like what you talked about now and how he stays in touch with guys, motivates guys. You know, guys on the east side of the state here in Spokane, they pull for each other, but we're always keeping an eye on the west side guys. And when they get to a certain level, they want guys to have success. It's really unique. I'm not sure there's any other pocket in the country that really is kind of supportive of each other at the high school level as it is in the state of Washington.
Coach, I am without Jamal Crawford. People will never understand that because he had the summer league, right? Yeah. He had pro summer league, and I'm a young coach at JUCO, right? And I want to coach as much as possible. I want head coaching reps, right, because this is my goal. And I would go down to Rainier Vista, and I would rebound for these guys and work them out because I wasn't trying to play. I was young, and I had the back injury, so I just wanted to be around. When he started his league, I was like, you know, maybe I'll help him be like an assistant coach. You know, they probably got all these guys, whatever, whatever. And the guy who I worked with, his name was Rob, he's like, I want you to be the head coach. And I was like, man, this is great. So I'm on the sideline, and I'm coaching. I got Terrence Williams sometimes on my roster. I got Nate Robb sometimes. You know, I got all these dudes, and I'm standing there twice a week, all summer, Saturday and Sunday, coaching in the pro-am. And then we won it back-to-back. One year, where we just – and I'm coaching these high-level games with these big refs and just like – and I'm thinking, like, those reps gave me so much confidence. If Jamal doesn't say, yeah, man, he can come. He can coach. He can do it. He's a young guy. He is, where else is he going to get his reps? You know, I don't know if I had the confidence to go to Southeastern from Tacoma Community College. But I had those head coaching reps for 4 years. I stayed on the sideline and coached pros who would cuss me out if I did something dumb or subbed them out or couldn't draw up a play. And then they would listen, like, man, you got to be able to do this, bro. And I'm like, man, I'm learning. But they kept it real with me. And so, like, Jamal, yeah, man, Jamal, and he still texts me to this day when something good happens. He's like, man, keep doing what you're doing, bro. Like, that's rare. It's a rare trait. And when the man of the state's doing that, you got no choice but to follow suit if you're a pro.
Yeah, I love the stories of how guys are so interconnected across the state with their basketball and coaching careers. Last question before I let you go. Coaching mentor. You've probably played for or worked for good coaches and bad coaches. Is there one that sticks out to you? And what he's meant to your career?
Yeah, there's one that sticks out. It's Carl Howe at TCC. Now he's at Skagit Valley. I'm gonna give you two. So Carl Howe sticks out because he gave me my first opportunity, and he's the one that told me you need to know how to do everything, right? So when I took the job at TCC. You know, that night before, in my head, I think I'm coming to coach basketball, right? I'm coming to be in the gym all day, and there's paperwork stuff, and the laundry, and the travel. It doesn't even cross your mind. And then you walk in, and you sit down, and he's like, we don't get to get in the gym until we get our travel and our schedule. And he made me learn how to do those things. He did not give me here's the process. He says, don't go figure it out. And I'm so glad I worked for someone like that first. Because it molded me to take advantage of learning opportunities. And then just, you know, our relationship's been through a lot, and he's always had my back and always supported me. And the dude's a winner, and so, you know, I like to stay around guys like that. The second guy is a guy named Stan Jones at Florida State, associate head coach at Florida State. When I first got out to Florida, then I called every Division I head coach and assistant coach, everyone, and Division II assistant coaches. I didn't call the Division II head coaches. I called all the assistant Division II assistant coaches. On my drive from Lakeland, from Tacoma to Lakeland, it's about 3 or 4 day drive, I called every single one. The coach that called me back was Leonard Hamilton and Stan Jones from Florida State. Now, just think about that. And Stan Jones was like, I appreciated your voicemail. I wouldn't research you. I want to help you out. And so me and him are talk 3 or 4 times a week. He's coached with Coach Ham for, I think, 18 years. He's been with Coach Ham, and he started his career in a high school gym, and Coach Ham saw the talent and came and grabbed him, and that's how he became a Division I coach. And so our stories are similar to where Coach Rice came and grabbed me at a place that most guys don't go get D1 coaches. And I felt like I was ready because Stan Jones will will watch some of my games and say, you need to change the way you're getting back on D. That's not going to help you win against a good team. You need to do this. So a tactical mentor and then a man of God and a man that lives the right way that I want to model myself after. So that was huge for me to see someone at the highest level, and people knew who he was based on his values. Because I see a lot of guys feel like, I used to think, if I got that level, I had to change. I can't say this, I can't say that. And he always tell me, if you build your reputation the right way here, when you get your job, people will respect who you are. And so I think phrases like that really, really, really helped me. And we played them 3 times, and they have really helped my program.
Those two tremendous mentors. I know Carl a little bit. He's a big supporter of Scorebook Live, what we do. But that was great to hear about assistant coach at Florida State. So, RJ, I appreciate the time on our Scorebook Live Washington Today podcast. Wish you nothing but the best of luck over at Boise State. And I know it's hard to do, but keep Leon Rice in check as best you can.
Can I ask you one question?
Absolutely.
What when you transferred, right, in college, what was the hardest part of doing that?
I think the hardest part of deciding to transfer at the time is the uncertainty of because I was hurt, the uncertainty of, is there going to be a school that wants me or if that I will fit into, because at that time there wasn't a lot of transferring going on in the college game.
You're like one of the few guys that.
Yeah. So it was rare to transfer at that time. It was 1999, left UW to transfer. And there was only 2 schools that I reached out to. And this is, I think, unique that a lot of people in the state of Washington that follow high school basketball don't realize who are also Husky fans. Is the 2 coaches that I sent a release to try to go to. Gonzaga, because all my buddies, Richie Fromm, Casey Calvary, those guys were having success. They just came off the Elite Eight. And St. Louis. Guess who was the head coach of St. Louis? Lorenzo Romar.
Wow.
Because he recruited me in high school when he was at Pepperdine. And I remember developing a great relationship with him. I trusted him. I believed in him. And Lorenzo, we had the phone conversation. I remember it clear as day. He said, hey, I'd love to get you out to St. Louis for a visit. I think this would be a great place for you. But what I want you to do first, go to Gonzaga, take your visit. I guarantee you it's the perfect spot for you. If it's not the perfect spot and you don't commit, give me a call on Monday. We'll get you out to St. Louis. You can check us out. I committed on my visit to Gonzaga. It was the perfect fit. That could have ever been out there. And so it worked out perfectly. And to this day, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Romar because of that.
Wow. I mean, that's a great story. Good for coaches here and players here too now, because when you go in the portal, if you were to go in the portal now.
Yeah.
There's a guy who got hit up from, 29 schools, and you had some that were in the top 10 in the country, and you had some that hadn't been in the tournament in 30 years. So it's like the decisions guys have to make now when they go in the portal, very, very difficult. And everybody's not like Romar. They're not going to, put their integrity out there like that. But I always wanted to ask you that question because I remember watching your career, and I was thinking, I wonder what he went through when he transferred, because it wasn't happening a lot. So I know people were saying things, and it was cool to see you still – keep your integrity from afar, not knowing you, and then seeing you still have the success you're having today because of those things. So I always wanted to ask you that question.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you joining. Look forward to seeing Boise State again next year at some point during my broadcast travels. But thanks again, and have yourself a great and safe day.
You too. We'll be right back.